My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Grant and Danny coming your way today out and about on a picture-perfect Tuesday from 1757 Golf Club in Ashburn, out by where the Commanders train. You're locked into The Fan. The exclusive sponsor of our show is the law firm Cundori & Murad. They'll guide you and your family in the right direction and help you to draft a will, set up a trust, or to create a health care power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com and be sure to tell them we sent you so that they can give you a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. We are live all over D.C. on 106.7. We're live now for the next 3 hours in Richmond, AM 910, FM 105.1. We are also live in high-definition video on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page if you want to watch us and stream us that way. Speaking of the stream, Odyssey app, wherever you go, anywhere in the country, take us with you. Pause and rewind the show. Really easy way to check us out. Let's hit rewind and spin you around the NFL for week one with our fastest segment in football. Where to begin? We start with the Steelers and the Falcons in Atlanta. 18-10 Pittsburgh win. Chris Boswell made 6 field goals. That's how you get the Player of the Week award on special teams.
Indeed, yeah.
In the NFL. Pittsburgh's defense generated 3-8 takeaways. That does not even count the 2 sack fumbles taken off the board for penalties that T.J. Watt had. He completely wrecked the game. Atlanta's debut with offensive coordinator Zach Robinson and quarterback Kirk Cousins went dreadfully. 2-for-9 on third down. Cousins was intercepted 2 times coming back from the Achilles injury. Bijan Robinson was held to 3.8 yards per carry. Justin Fields got the start for Pittsburgh and ran 14 times for 57 yards. The Falcons had just 25 minutes time of possession in the game, Danny. It was ugly in Atlanta.
And it felt like less than that. This is how Pittsburgh does it. It's so annoying. This is an offensively challenged group. No Russell Wilson. Enter Justin Fields, who, you know, did Justin Fieldsy things. A couple plays here and there. Not consistent as a thrower, but there they went. 6 different field goals, a dominant defense. T.J. Watt might be the best player in the NFL. He might be the number one most impactful. Just when they have him, they're great at on that side of the ball. When they don't, they're mediocre. He is amazing.
With Aaron Donald retired now, he is the best defensive player in the league, that's for sure. Let's go to Buffalo, where the Bills beat the Cardinals 34-28. We got our first touchdown return with the new kickoff rules in this game. A 96-yard touchdown return by DJ Dallas of the Cardinals, but it was not enough. Buffalo trailed 17-3 at one point in the game. Josh Allen, 232 yards, 2 passing touchdowns, also ran for 40 yards and 2 touchdowns, a 4-score game for him. Rookie debuting Keon Coleman, 4 catches for 51 yards as the new number one target in Buffalo. The Bills' offense looked different, didn't it?
Yeah.
A little more balanced, 19 carries, 71 yards for James Cook. Kyler Murray threw for 162 yards, ran for 57 in a pretty good outing in a loss for the Cardinals, who are like the best bad team in the league.
Yeah, they're frisky. I don't have another way to say that. They're not good. They're not ready for prime time yet, but they're also not pushovers. I mean, last year, they were an also-ran. They were just an easy W for whoever was on their schedule for the most part. They are not going to be an easy out this year. They are improved, certainly. I thought they were the better team for probably, I don't know, 3/5 of this game overall, but Josh Allen put his cape on. That's really what this was. When they were down 17-3, you touched on it, Buffalo went on a 2-minute drive, and it was just Josh Allen doing crazy stuff, taking whether it was escaping, whether it was design runs, whether he's bulldozing people, he's flying over guys into the end zone, just an absolute weapon. They're going to struggle for a little bit on offense because you mentioned it's very balanced. There's no easy button with Stephon Diggs anymore. So they had to spread it around a little bit, but Buffalo, impressive comeback in this one.
Bears 24-17, survivors against the Titans. They move to 1-0 to start their season, and they did it without a single offensive touchdown. Caleb Williams struggled in his first game. 14 of 29 passing for 93 yards. The Bears managed 148 yards of offense and won. Figure that out. 2.8 yards per play in a victory. They scored on special teams. Punt return touchdown for Jonathan Owens, the husband of Simone Biles. And then on defense, they got a touchdown as well. A pick six by corner Tyreek Stevenson on a bad Will Levis decision. So despite Williams really scuffling, the offense doing next to nothing, an injury to Roma Dunze, who caught a pass for 11 yards in his first game, the Bears win 24-17.
This is one of those strange games where nobody should feel good, right? Chicago shouldn't feel very good at all because their offense, as you said, was anemic. It was beyond disappointing. For example, Keenan Allen had 11 targets but only 4 catches for 29 yards. They couldn't connect. Roma Dunze now is week to week with a knee. Caleb Williams really struggled in this one. Chicago's defense did more than enough, and now we add in a pick six and a blocked punt there for a touchdown. But for Tennessee's perspective, they were in control 17-0. They were the better. They were dominating this game and couldn't get out of their own way. Couldn't manage little things on offense. Couldn't just be normal. Couldn't punt the ball a couple different times. And that led to a loss. That's a bad loss. But Tennessee is, I don't think they're any good, but they're not terrible anymore. This is one of those that really got away from them in week one. Should have been a win.
Yeah, Shane Waldron's got to find some answers for the Bears passing game and do so quickly. Let's go to Cincinnati where the Bengals did the Bengals thing.
Yeah.
They started a season with a really terrible loss, and they looked gross in the process. Give the Patriots credit, though. Nobody thought this team would win this game. They knocked probably half of America out in survivor pools already. I know I was one of those people. 16-10 final, New England a win despite 121 passing yards from a fairly ineffective Jacoby Brissett. He did run for 32 yards, including a big 16-yard scramble in this game. Old friend Antonio Gibson had 7 carries with a long of 8. The main back for the Patriots is still Ramondre Stevenson, who went for a 120 and a touchdown in the win. The leading receiver, this will tell you a lot about the Patriots' offense, the leading receiver for New England in this game, 2 catches for 31 yards for tight end Austin Hooper. He caught a ball for 16, caught a ball for 15, and that was his day, and he was the leading receiver for the team. But they had a 4-sack performance defensively. They harassed Joe Burrow, who was held to 164 passing. They kept Jamar Chase to 62 yards receiving, 28 of that on one play. And the Patriots, not the Bengals, are the team that got to 1-0.
So two things. Star of this game is Christian Gonzalez. He was incredible. Just absolutely shut down Jamar Chase. I don't expect that to continue throughout the season. I think Chase gets his sea legs underneath him and ends up bowling out, looking for a long-term contract in his own right. But you mentioned it. This is now known as the Cincinnati. This is what they do. They start off very poorly. They look dead in the water through 3, 4, maybe even 5 weeks. And then, if Burrow is healthy, they kind of come rip-roaring back and beat up everybody. So I'm not counting them out just yet, but that was a dreadful performance, especially on offense. Patriots, good for them. Happy for Gerard Mayo. That's nice to, you know, to be thought of as an afterthought, as a pushover. You get a week one win on the road, no less. Good for him and good for them. They're not going anywhere. They're not particularly good. But Cincinnati, that's disappointing.
Yeah, and to the point on Mayo, he got the Gatorade bath from his excited players at the end of the game. You could tell they really, really like playing for him. Let's go to Indianapolis, where the Colts had an early lead but couldn't hang on. 29-27, thrilling win for the Texans at the Colts in a good AFC South matchup. The highlight from this game you'll see is the Anthony Richardson touchdown pass that traveled almost 70 yards in the air off his back foot right after he had slipped in the pocket.
Incredible.
Moving to his left. It was one of the craziest throws I've ever seen. If you take that out of the equation, he was basically 8 of 18 for like
150
yards or something. I mean, it wasn't a particularly good day, but he's got that in his back pocket. He's got some physical traits that nobody else has. The really good player at quarterback in this game was C.J. Stroud, who went for 234 and 2 touchdowns without any turnovers. And the revelation here was My goodness, the Texans running the football.
Joe Mixon.
159 on the ground for Joe Mixon, and it was a well-earned. Like, you think about a guy going for a buck 50. There's probably like a 52-yard run in there or whatever. His long was 13. It was just 7, 8, 9, 5, 6. I mean, they earned it. 30 for 159 for the bell cow Joe Mixon. Nico Collins building off of a breakout last year. 6 grabs, 117 yards. And welcome to Houston, Stephon Diggs. He caught 6 passes and scored 2 touchdowns.
Indeed. This was a great game. This was so much fun. I want these guys to do this, talking about Stroud and Richardson, for the next decade. I want that to be the theme. I want that to be the new Rodgers-Brady or whatever. Two totally different styles. You touched on it. Richardson, you got to live with some bad. You got to live with some overthrows. You got to live with some misses. You got to live with a couple things that aren't particularly desirable to get some of these incredible highlight plays. Him barreling through defenses, him trucking people close to the goal line, had a rushing touchdown. That highlight throw that you mentioned where he slipped and fell and is almost all the way to the ground and throws it 70 yards on a line to Alec Pierce. Incredible, incredible stuff. And then C.J. Stroud is just a technician. Just cruel and malicious at times to what he does to defenses. You think he got him in the grasp. He's rolling out, throwing back across his body, breaking every rule. But he's cool as a cucumber, man. He's incredible.
The Miami Dolphins were down 14-0 and 17-7 at home to the Jacksonville Jaguars. But it was the Dolphins getting a 20-17 win with a field goal at the horn from 52 yards off the leg of Jason Sanders to win the football game. The day started with Tyreek Hill getting arrested outside of the stadium by police officers, and it ended with Tyreek Hill catching an 80-yard touchdown from Tua Tagovailoa to help get them back into the football game. But here was really when this game swung. Jacksonville was up by 10, late third quarter, at the goal line, trying to go up 17, and they fumbled into the end zone. Beautiful play defensively by Miami to punch the ball out from Travis Etienne. They recovered it in the end zone. And then on the ensuing couple of snaps from the 20-yard line, that 80-yard touchdown to Hill. And that 14-point swing was the difference. Trevor Lawrence, just 162 and a touchdown through the air. Tank Bigsby split carries with Travis Etienne. Very interesting, I'd say, for fantasy owners. Bigsby was better, 73 yards. Etienne had 44, did score a touchdown, but also lost that fumble. But Tua, 338 and a touchdown after his big contract. Hill, 7 for 130 and a touchdown after getting out of handcuffs. And Jaylen Waddle, 5 for 109. He left the game with an injury.
Yeah, was able to return, though, right? He went out and came back in? Or was there something later on in that game that I might have missed? But, yeah, Miami got off to that sluggish start, beyond sluggish. Just looked rusty, looked like they weren't on the same page. Huge struggle for them, down 14-0, as you mentioned. Late second quarter, Devin Achane runs in from a yard out, got them on the board. But you said it, that 14-point swing where Etienne's going to – looks like he's walking in, looks like he's done all the hard part. All he has to do is kind of hold on and fall into the end zone. Ball gets punched out. Moments later, Tyreek Hill 80 yards away. That changed everything. Disappointing loss there for the Jaguars. Kind of nice little gut check, though, for the Dolphins, right?
Yeah, I think that was the kind of game, honestly, after it happens, you're probably better it went that way. Glad if you're mm-hmm. Mike McDaniel. Yeah. You're happier, I should say.
Because you get to prove a point and you win a game.
Totally. Yeah. One team that didn't have to prove any points, they just dominated every facet of a game from start to finish, was the Saints. No medal tested in this one. They beat the Panthers 47-10. They led 30-0 and 37-3 before garbage time. I don't know where to begin the breakdown. I'll just say with Carolina, they looked horrific, and Bryce Young looks broken. It's way too early probably to just say he's a bust, but he was terrible. 13 of 30 for 161 and 2 interceptions, and he was worse than that stat line. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, oh, he must have played terribly. That would be a compliment. I mean, he was worse than the numbers. On the other side, Derek Carr, who had people calling for him to be benched before the season started, in complete control, 4 incompletions, 3 touchdowns, 200 yards passing, hit a 70-yard touchdown right off the beginning of the game. In that performance, Rashid Shaheed, who caught the touchdown from 60 yards, I should say, went for 73. Foster Moreau also caught a touchdown. The Saints, Alvin Kamara, 15 carries for 83 and a score. Jamal Williams had a rushing touchdown. It was kind of a you-get-a-score game, Oprah Winfrey style.
Just a personal anecdote, if I may. My freshman year at the George Washington University, we had a really fun game against the George Mason Patriots. We won that game 26-13. A lot of runs were scored. Everybody in our lineup had multiple hits, except for me. I was 0 for 5. That was the Chris Olave stat line that ruined so many fantasy weeks. Two catches for 11 yards when a team scores 47 points. But that's my only relative complaint about this game. The Saints got a 1-AA team in their first week. Carolina should be relegated. They're not professional. They're terrible. They're an embarrassment. I feel bad for a lot of these players. They cannot compete at this level at this time.
The Vikings looked really good in their win over the Giants, 28-6, behind Sam Darnold, who was dynamite. 19 of 24 for Darnold, 208 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. He cooled off in the second half of the game, but the damage was done. They were already up big time. They led 21-3 in the early third quarter. Aaron Jones, who came over from Green Bay, gives Minnesota a running game. They have 94 rushing yards and a touchdown to thank him for in week one, and they got after Daniel Jones, who was god-awful. I listened to some New York radio from yesterday after the Giants game, and the questions were, is it time to bench Daniel Jones already? I mean, do they have to go to Tommy DeVito? Should they go to the bullpen, basically? Brian Daboll was getting those questions after the game, after Jones was intercepted twice, including a pick six. Couldn't get the run game going. Devin Singletary, 3.7 a pop. Malik Nabers in his first ever game, just 5 grabs for 66 yards. He was their best player on offense. Next stop for the Giants, Northwest Stadium in Landover, Maryland.
Yes, northwest of the city. No, it's east of the city. Either way, Daniel Jones had almost a negative 0.5 EPA per play. That means every time he did something, it was almost worth minus half a point for the New York Giants in this game. He was terrible. They're terrible. And, you know, they've got Washington here this coming week. For Minnesota, great beginning for Sam Darnold there. I forget exactly what he started. It was like 15 for 15 or something to that effect.
I think I saw he maxed out at maybe 14 for 14.
Yeah.
Close enough.
Ended up only with 5 incompletions on the day. The offense looked like it had more in the tank if it wanted to. Aaron Jones, I thought, was workmanlike and impressive even at times. And Justin Jefferson, 4 for 59 in the touch.
Speaking of debuts, Jim Harbaugh is 1-0 with the Chargers. He shows up, you win football games, and you run the football. J.K. Dobbins, just 10 carries. He went for 135. That guy's had more serious injuries that have ended seasons and keeps coming back than anybody I know.
Amazing.
The other former Raven that the Chargers have running the football, Gus Edwards, also had 11 carries in the game. Justin Herbert, caretaking, 144 and a score through the air. Ladd McConkey, the rookie they drafted at wide receiver, caught his first touchdown. Joey Bosa had a sack on defense for the Chargers in a 22-10 win over the Vegas Raiders.
This is a Big Ten game. That's what it felt like, right? Just workmanlike, nothing special happening on offense, very low ceiling. Having Justin Herbert playing this offense is like having a Corvette that you just ride reverse around the cul-de-sac. This is how they're going to do it, though. If they're going to hand it off to former Ravens running backs, check it down, do a couple, you know, bigger receivers on the outside, or let Ladd McConkey work from the slot. There's not a high ceiling on this offense, but this is how they're going to play. They're going to beat you up, push you around, and make it a pushing contest. And they won week one of that against a worse version of that in the Raiders.
Seahawks outlasted the Broncos 26-20, a come-from-behind victory in the second half for Seattle behind Geno Smith. Geno in this game had a 34-yard rushing touchdown, also threw for 171 and a score through a touchdown pass to Zach Charbonnet from 30 yards out. Denver debuted Bo Nix. He threw 2 interceptions and really struggled. Yards per attempt, minuscule. One of just a few quarterbacks in league history to ever throw the ball 42 times and not amass 140 passing yards. So they got work to do. Nix was also their leading rusher with 35 yards at the quarterback position on 5 attempts. Oh, by the way, not a good first game for Denver in the Knicks era with Sean Payton in year 2. But for Seattle, a win for Mike McDonald, who interviewed for the Commanders' head coaching job. They looked really good.
I was impressed with them. I mean, it ends up being a 26-20 game, so it looks closer than it was. Seattle was by far the better team in this game. Knicks was running for his life, had a couple scrambles here and there. They got to have something downfield. It's not in the cards right now, though.
33-17 final in Cleveland, where the Cowboys whooped up on the Browns. Talk about games that were not as close as the score would indicate. Dallas led 27-3 in the third and basically stopped playing. Like, literally, Dak Prescott didn't throw it again, really. CeeDee Lamb, 5 for 61. Prescott got paid in the morning, then went out and threw for 179 in a score. Dallas got a 21-yard touchdown from Brandon Cooks to get started. Then Ezekiel Elliott, in his return, scored from 3 yards out. Brandon Aubrey, their kicker, made field goals of 57, 50, 46, and 40 in the game. They got a 60-yard punt return for a touchdown on special teams from Kevontae Turpin. I mean, it was just a bloodbath. The Browns were bad, and Deshaun Watson stunk bad enough that there were callers on Cleveland radio asking about going and getting Baker Mayfield back and how much better he is than Deshaun Watson. That's where we're at with the Browns quarterback situation.
Yeah, the Browns were a disaster in this one. Dallas deserves credit. They were the better team by far. They were dominant. They were really, really good. They had beat a lot of teams on Sunday. But Cleveland was just a mess. Their offense was totally disrupted. They had no answer for Micah Parsons, had no answer for anything Dallas was doing on both sides of the ball. I thought Cleveland would be more competitive in this, to be honest with you. I know they're weak at QB with Watson and his current status, but I thought defensively they'd be a lot tougher than they played. That was not a good performance.
Last game on Sunday in our fastest 16 minutes here on Grant and Danny. The Rams played well, but it wasn't enough against one of the classes of the NFC. The Detroit Lions win in overtime 26-20 with bully ball, an 8-play 70-yard drive in OT where David Montgomery ran it right down LA's throats for a win. He rushed for 91 and a touchdown. Jahmyr Gibbs added a score on the ground. Jamison Williams broke out at wide receiver, 5 for 121, and a 52-yard catch and run touchdown from Jared Goff. Goff threw for 217 and that score. Matt Stafford was really good, 315, a touchdown. Lone pick was in the red zone, in the end zone. Cooper Kupp, 14 catches for 110 yards and a touchdown in a losing effort for the Rams. Kyren Williams scored for L.A.
Rams are already beat up, man. I mean, they're going through linemen. Puka Nacua is going to be out for a little bit, it seems like. They were just running guys in. That was a fire drill there. Give them credit, though, for forcing that game in overtime. Detroit took advantage of a tired, beat-up group and walked right down the field to win. That was as good a game as you're going
to
find.
It happens to the Rams a lot, doesn't it?
It always seems to, right?
Early in the season, always too. Seems it's like to. Them and the Chargers. It's something in L.A. All right, there you go. Your fastest 16 minutes on Grant and Danny around the NFL. Everything you needed to know about this weekend's games. Next is the kicker issue fixed in Washington, D.C. once and for all. And what about using Austin Ekeler and Brian Robinson on the field at the same time? Dan Quinn had a thought about that you'll want to hear next on G&D.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Our double play set for 15 minutes out on Grant and Danny. We're blitzing in a half hour. Remember, Austin Eckler makes his first ever appearance in season with us, our Tuesday guest, every 5 o'clock segment on Tuesdays on Grant and Danny this football season. And it is a Tuesday, which means Commanders Survivor. You can go vote at facebook.com/Grant and Danny. Kick a player off the island. Give a player immunity. We will announce the winner and the loser on Commanders Survivor for week one in our final segment today. Speaking of winners and losers at the kicking position, pretty clear loser this week in D.C., Cade York. He has already been released after missing 2 field goals, kicking a ball out of bounds on a kickoff, and having an onside kick go awry. The winner in that exchange, Austin Seibert. He is the new kicker for the Commanders. So I guess what we could dive into now is, have they solved this thing? Or do we think this is going to be an all-season-long carousel? Danny, they had Brandon McManus, who they paid handsomely. Allegations came out, harassment, assault. They said, we're done with him. Charges have since been dropped, but that ship has sailed, it would appear, even though he's still out of work. Since then, they have now run through 4 different kickers, including Austin Seibert, who showed up yesterday.
Yeah, so one note on McManus, the suit has been refiled with the names of the plaintiffs. They were missing the first time, so that process is beginning anew. So I don't think anything's really changed from Washington's perspective on that, but it's still important to note. I don't think it's solved at all. I think they traded Cade York in for another Cade York, a guy that doesn't have a lot of kicking experience, that's caught on part-time for a couple of teams, and sort of that's been that. And I think we're going to be doing this for a while. They seem to want to find, and I get this, the next guy they can hang on to and develop and have it, you know, turn into their dude for a long time. And that's all well and good, but you got to, you know, break a few eggs to make that omelet here. And that's what it feels like they're doing.
I don't think you can just cut kickers every couple of weeks who are missing kicks, though. And I don't think that's their plan. And someone could say, well, they just cut one after 1 week who missed 2 field goals. What are you talking about? And I believe that the reason they cut Cade York was because if he was on the roster, they'd lose a draft pick, and they didn't want to lose the 7th-round pick. Because remember, they traded a 7th-round pick for him. What we didn't know until recently, and this is sharp by their front office and by Adam Peters, was that it was a contingent and a conditional 7th-round pick. And ultimately, they had the ability to pull the ripcord if it wasn't going well after a game. And that's exactly what happened, and they used their get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah.
So I don't think their plan is, hey, we're just going to cut kickers every time they miss a couple of kicks. That's not a position, I don't think, where you could really do that, to be frank. It's a confidence position. It's a, you know, not looking over your shoulder or worried that your coach is going to call you into the special teams office to tell you you're going home every time you do something wrong. I don't think it's easy to kick when you feel like your job's on the line every time you take the field. My guess is they're going to tell Seibert, hey, this thing's yours. We're sinking or swimming with you. Let's rock and roll. And you give him at least till halfway through the season and reassess. Now, maybe if it's a complete shebingus, like if this is a debacle of epic proportions, we'll call it a Blewett situation, where it's obvious that this person doesn't really belong.
You never want to go full Blewett.
You can't do that. But if it's just a normal NFL kicker, hits some, misses some, has plenty of leg, then I think they're actually going to let this ride. If I had to bet right now today, I'd say Seibert finishes the season as their kicker.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so I would bet against that, but because I think it's on the plan that you just described. They're not going to cut him next week. They're not doing a kicker a week, and I think they're too smart for that. But I don't think it's solved either, right? This will be a 6-7, maybe even 8 or 9 game kind of thing, and then they'll just go, okay, we can't.
I mean, he's got to be really bad, in my opinion, to get cut. Because, like, guys like Cade York, which is what he is essentially, they miss 6-7 kicks in a year, and teams just kind of gut it out, hoping they have a young kicker with a nice leg. That's kind of where we're at. I think that's probably the big picture plan with this guy. Let's let him kick. Even if he misses a few, that's fine.
I'd like to think that that's the case, because if you're again, they refuse to say the word rebuild. That's what they're doing. They're rebuilding. And when you're doing that, you should have a young kicker on your roster without a lot of experience who can grow into the position and grow with you and ultimately turn out to be pretty good, like David Akers in Philadelphia years ago. Or you know, you can sort of pick your guy. So that's my hope, is that they're patient. But I get the sense, you know, when coaches are, you know, you're turning in the report card and you lose maybe a game or two because of it, somebody misses an extra point or forces you into a decision, and you're trying so hard to get the real football players to buy into your program and there's not enough positive reinforcement, it becomes a symbolic move. That was the classic Rivera to me, when the defense has a terrible game. Well, we can't cut all these guys, but we sure as bleep can cut the kicker, and we'll show you that it's not acceptable. That's an easy sacrificial lamb, kind of in season.
One other Commander's note. I want to play some audio on Dan Quinn discussing using two running backs together from the press conference yesterday. This relates directly to Eckler, our 5 o'clock guest. But you and I talked about how he was probably deserving of more work and more touches just based on how he performed. And it was one of the few answers we got in week one, I'd say, that now you can put something to bed. Like, I think you and I all offseason kind of said we both thought Eckler had plenty left in the tank, but it's possible after last season, maybe, that he's washed or he doesn't have the same ability he did 4 or 5 years ago. To me, he looked like Austin Eckler this weekend. 4 catches for 52 yards, averaged 5 yards a carry on his 2 carries for 4 and 6. And the question came up. There were a couple plays where he and Robinson were both out there. There was a play I remember where he came in like jet action from like the slot and was eye candy going one way, and they used Robinson as a battering ram going off tackle the other way. Do they want to do more of that? It certainly sounds like it, according to head coach Dan Quinn.
Yeah, I think going into it, it's always something you want to do. Each game will have a little different flavor. What you're looking for sometimes, too, Ben, is how do teams match up against that specific look? But in order to find those matchups, you got to do them. And so, yes, I would say that is certainly one of the packages that that we really like.
Now, you're on record. You want more Austin Eckler. How would you feel about if that means maybe Robinson's not off the field and it's just Eckler next to Daniels in the gun, and they got both of those guys out there?
It's not how I would do it, but I will trade a lot of things. You know what I mean? I'll give up a lot as long as it means Austin Eckler gets more. Whatever they got to do, we can do that. That's fine by me. It's not how I would design it. I would just have Austin Eckler on the field, and you can hand it off to him on first down or throw it to him on first down. Or, you know, because Brian Robinson has proved he can catch passes adequately out of the backfield as well. So there's no, you're not governed by this is this person's role, this is that person's role. I think too many coaches get stuck in those kinds of ruts. I just want more Eckler. Not overkill. You can't give him 25, 30 touches a game. This is not a bell cow in his prime. This is not, 2,000-yard Adrian Peterson. It's not that. But this is somebody that absolutely needs to touch the football before the end of the third quarter, like it was this past week.
And I'm very much cool with both of them being on the field, because for me, my endorsement of Eckler is not at the expense of an indictment of Robinson, which I'd say is more of kind of how you feel. I thought Robinson was excellent as a receiver as well in the game. He had a catch called back that would have gotten him over 60 receiving yards on 4 catches. He had a 32-yard reception where he made a couple guys miss. I think that is something he can do. It's a strength of his game. It's part of what he's going to be able to accomplish all season long offensively is catching balls on those swings out of the backfield. And then that's not a guy that's fun to tackle in the open field.
No, I don't mean to imply that I don't want Robinson to play either. I just need more Eckler. So whatever I have to do to get that, I'll do that.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We are at 1757 Golf Course today, where there's a great event benefiting the Wounded Warriors out here in Ashburn near the team facility. And Mark Rippon is among some of the great former Redskins in attendance. I believe we're going to catch up with him next, which will be a thrill and very, very cool. You're listening to The Fan. Welcome back to the 1757 Golf Course out here in Ashburn near the Commander's facility. Grant and Danny with you on 106.7 The Fan, and we are honored right now to be joined on site by a Super Bowl MVP, Super Bowl 26, a multi-time Pro Bowler, and one of the great Redskins passers in history. The legendary Mark Rippon is with us on G&D, and we are honored to have him on set with us here from this golf event. So, Mark, thank you for the time. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Great to be on the show, and awesome to be out here with these veterans. What a moving experience. I think the cool part about this is that
all these guys that are have served our country and the ultimate sacrifice, you know, that they give each and every day. And to play with Matt Williams today, who was our Medal of Honor recipient, and Nick Levenry, and what they mean to all of us. And I think it really sets a stage here where we as athletes, and we play in our sport, and we get to become part of a team. And you see these guys and how they, whether they're the armed forces for the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Air Force, each one of these armed forces are like a team too. And they have great stories, fun guys, good golfers, a lot of them. And it's just a tremendous to be a part of this and help out what they're trying to do, and that's help their families and of servicemen and women that are doing what they do for our country.
Heroes and Legends event out here benefiting the Wounded Warriors, just an amazing cause. You mentioned stories. I always, having grown up, listened to my mom and dad tell me so many stories about this proud franchise. I love when you and some of your teammates and some of the greats in organizational history get together, because I'd imagine you guys can spin a pretty good yarn, too.
Our fishing stories get bigger and bigger every
that's
year.
Right, that's right.
It's great, because I live on the West Coast. I'm in Spokane, Washington, so I only get out here probably four or five times a year. You know, my daughter and her husband was Lieutenant Colonel of the Marine Corps, and my granddaughter live up in Baltimore. My other daughter lives in Orlando, so I get on the East Coast quite a bit. But I enjoy coming out here and seeing guys like, you know, a guy came in to the league with Raven Caldwell play, seeing him play golf and support this great movement that we're trying to do here, and to get out here and watch them and then see our commanders play. Everything, we're all eager and excited to see them get back on track. And you know, it's a process. I think as we all know, Jaden Daniels is pretty special. If we can keep him healthy and you know, I think that's going to be the main thing. Let's face it, you can't give up four touchdowns to Baker Mayfield and expect to get into the playoffs. So we've got to tie some loose ends together there and get back here and on our own home turf and play well in front of our fans and get our fans and this community, who I think was excited coming in here, a little bit more excited about our football team.
Mark Reppin with us here on Grant and Danny. So I want to touch on that, Mark. Going back to that post-87 magical run, that incredible season, Super Bowl, there's a bill that has to happen. And I think you came on board in 88, if memory serves,
yeah,
right?
86.
86. Oh, there yep, you go. Yep. Yeah. So, but you saw kind of that transition to go from not where you guys wanted to be to exactly where you wanted to be, the best team in the NFL.
Yeah, he came in together.
That's right.
I just told him that. I just got done mentioning that, Raven. Yeah.
But they're kind of in the beginning stages of that now, coming off a season that nobody was happy about. You got a new coaching staff, new everything. Go into that where it's you know the light at the end of the tunnel exists. You know where that is, but getting there is really, really hard.
Oh, absolutely.
Speak to that.
The bar was high. Yeah. It was already high. You know, you had JT, that Theismann and Riggo that had won a Super Bowl, that 82 team was probably the best team in the NFL that didn't win a Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
And then to see the maturation of those guys in 86 go through a strike year, and a lot of us not even knowing if we were going to come back. But Joe Gibbs, a man of his word, said, you know, you guys go out together, you come back together, you know. And so we went out that strike year, came back together. Our replacement team was really, really good, you know, and got us in a good position. And then, of course, Doug got hot in the playoffs and just rolled through the playoffs. And we got Darryl Green's touchdown against the Bears and
yep.
stopping Darren Nelson at the one-yard line against the Vikings. And those things I remember like yesterday. And I was in a sweater writing plays down, you know, and scripting plays and all that. And then to roll Denver in the Super Bowl after being down 10-0 first quarter and getting that 42 or 35 points, a golden quarter of the NFL. And so Doug was kind of my mentor, you know, for the next couple of years, and we played off and on together, but he's very helpful. And one of the reasons, you know, I had a lot of success was because of Jerry Rome, Doug Williams, Joe Gibbs, a very offensive-minded head coach, you know, and we had the Hogs, and we were able to do the things that you want to do in football anyway. That's run the football and make plays off play action. And that year in 91-92, we certainly did that. I think we obviously led the league, and I don't think anyone's come close in the last 20 years to making the big plays that we made that year. And we had special players. You know, we had Gary, Ricky, and Art, the posse that were, you know, instrumental, and along with Ernest Biner, the Hogs, and it was just a great group of guys.
Super Bowl 26 MVP Mark Rippon on Grant and Danny. I've always wanted to ask you about that season. It was 9 sacks given up, right, all
yes.
year? I mean, that's unheard of in any standard, but today, I mean, that's just a number that seems comical. How much of sacks do you say are, that was a great line, everyone knows that,
yep.
but quarterback driven too, getting the ball out, dropping to the proper depth, mean, it seems to me like when there's a sack, it's immediately, well, the pass protection was bad. And there's a lot more to it than that, obviously.
A lot more. There's receivers running hot routes and running backs running hot routes, getting the ball out when you have to, knowing you don't have enough guys to block the guys that they're coming with. And then there's other times where they're going to rush more, but you got maximum protection and you got one-on-one with your receivers with no one in the middle of the field. So all you have to do is get your drop, make sure you get your set yourself and make the throw. So there's a lot of components to that. You know, most importantly, our guys up front, you're only as good as the guys up front. Our hogs are great. Donnie Warren was a special part of that. As our, you know, he's not a big pass catching tight end, but he was the guy in the running game and the passing game, was able to block Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White and Jerome Brown. I mean, there's great football players back then too, and we had to have special protections against those guys, game plan those guys, understand when they're coming, what they're doing. So there's a lot of guys on the same page. We had smart players, we had great athletes, and the receivers were as big a part as was Ernest Biner as far as blitz breakoffs and all the things you have to have in order to not take a sack. Then I didn't care. It was like if my numbers were 57%, I could have held on to the ball and maybe thrown 70%, you know, completions. That wasn't what we wanted. We didn't want to get ourselves in a bad situation at any point in time. We want to put ourselves in a good third down situation, get rid of the ball if you have to, make a play when you needed to, and we were all pretty good at that. And so and plus the fact our defense was so good. They got us in great field position a lot of the time. And our team as a whole, with Wayne Sevier and special teams, you know, Richie Pettibone run the defensive side, and of course Joe Gibbs and what we did in the offense. It was just a special year that year, 91-92. So
you mentioned this. I'd forgotten you were drafted in 86, but mm-hmm. then, you know, you played in 88. And it's just a different time now, right, where the instant a rookie sets foot on campus, he's the starter, has to be, and, you know, the clock is already ticking because of the CBA and the way contracts are. But that adjustment, guys don't have that luxury to wait anymore. Jaden Daniels, what's he going through right now? And just kind of, you know, related to your own experience and what you see from him.
Well, you want Jaden Daniels to be good last year when he wasn't even
right,
here. You know?
Right.
It's like, you know, what can you do for me right now? You know, that's the narrative for the league right now. I was fortunate. I've had some questionable injuries my first 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know,
are they still nagging you? They still bothering you?
Oh my goodness! Yeah. Or you roll out. In fact, one was above a tire. Mark, you're supposed to be down. Oh, and then jump back up, ready to get in the huddle. He goes, Mark, you're supposed to be, you know, a little hurt, aren't you? Sore, yeah. So,
is that some, like IR stuff?
Yes. You know, yeah. So you had, so there's some, you know, some things that we were able to manipulate a little bit to keep guys on IR, and because they didn't have practice squad then. So I'm very blessed because of that, you know, and was willing to do whatever role that I had to keep on the football team. And then when my time came, was able to watch. And that's a hard thing now for Jaden Daniels. He doesn't get an opportunity to sit there and watch, you know, what's happening, how the plays are. You know, how fast the game is, you know, what it's going to be like if he was in that situation. I had 2 years to do that. So when my time came, I was more prepared than Jaden Daniels was. But this kid's as gifted as they come. I mean, he's got more talent on one pinky than I did in my whole body. And I think if we have to be good on defense, you got to get him the football. You know, we can't be giving up 30 points, you know, to a Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Nothing against the Buccaneers, but we got to be better on defense. We got to get him the football, get him more touches, get our players more touches, get our skill players more touches, and be good on special teams. And special teams has changed now. You see where kickoffs are going now. I mean, everyone is into these optics now, where they saw what was happening during the preseason. They kicked it in the red zone. They got it past the 32 to the 35. They say, well, why not kick it out the back of the end zone? You're going to get it at 30. So that's what kickers are doing now. It's almost a waste of special team talent. You know, if you got great special team coverage guys, they're being wasted by this new rule. And I still don't. I don't understand it. Nor will I ever understand. What are they going to do if it's an onside kick? I mean, you're pretty much.
You have to tell beforehand.
You have to tell.
You've got
to tip your hand. Yeah. So it's to me, it's kind of a crazy thing. I don't know. I think the NFL will look at it and see how this year goes. But I do. No, we want to protect. You want to protect the players. We want to protect players from those massive, you know, 30-yard running down fields and colliding helmet to helmet. So obviously, we want to do that. But got to be a different way of doing it.
What's your take as someone who? All your great memories are at RFK Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking a lot about trying to get the team back to D.C. and the RFK site as opposed to maybe something immaculate out by where their current stadium is. I mean, do you have a horse in the race or care much where the next stadium is?
Oh, I care a lot. I mean, I'm just so far removed from it that I hope they get it in RFK. I hope they go back to that site, wipe the whole place up, and build a brand-new stadium there, and let's get back to, you know, being – what we were at one point in time, you know, one of the most dominant franchises in the history of the NFL. And I think so, if we can do that, and I think that'll also bring back some memories and some, you know, a father and their son. The son was being maybe 10 years old when we played then. Now he's 40 years old, and his son's coming in, the grandson of the dad who brought his son to the game. Get them back to that area, that place, and that special place where, you know, we can reminisce and build something again, because we're starting over from scratch with this newer management team. We've been a proven winner in their other franchises, whether it be 76ers and the Devils and soccer. Right? So they know what the formula is. Just get us a stadium now and get it back there at RFK, where RFK site is, and get this fan base excited. I mean, it almost hurt to, like, 10 years ago to come back to a Cowboys Redskins game and see more Cowboys fans in the stadium. Than it's embarrassing. That's not what we're about. And I guess we have to put a product out there. We have to put a product that wins week in and week out and is consistent. And I think we got the people to do it. Now let's just get out and do it.
We're still trying to get used to the name. Is it growing on you at all?
No, it never will. I never played for the Commanders. I absolutely support the Commanders and what they're doing now, but I never played for them. And, you know, it's just this day and age now that we have to deal with. And I just don't hope they don't lose the fact that we were Redskins, and that's all I played for. That's all I knew, and that's all, you know, we remember. So it's this new thing, and we're going to support these guys because that's the era we're in.
I was inside a few minutes ago, Danny, and someone said the Commanders legends are out there.
Well, are they?
And I was like, which ones?
Yeah. You
know? I'm not a Commander legend. I'm not. I'm a Redskin legend. Oh, I'm a Redskin lover.
We
got you.
Yeah. Super Bowl MVP. Yeah,
yeah. I love my guys. I love this guy, Ricky Irvin. I mean, he's one of the best people, and all those guys. They come back and they play in our Mickey Steele event we have out in Queenstown, and we get about 50 of these guys, and they mean so much to us. And Ricky was a big part of that Super Bowl team, and we love him. And all the guys, you know, they just mean a lot. So.
Have you had much interaction with Josh Harris and company, and what's it been like?
Yeah, during, in kind of when they got the team, and there was some stuff that they were doing in Vegas, I went out there and got to meet Josh and his brother, and, you know, they've invited me up to New Jersey if I ever get there for a Devils game, or if ever in Philly, you know, and but I just want to support these guys and this team.
Yep.
and get these this Commanders football team back to playing the type of football that the Redskins played back in our era. So,
well, we appreciate the time.
Yeah.
And
Danny, thank you.
Awesome
guys.
Catching up with you, and just great to get to chat with the legends that made this team still what it is now so many years
ago.
Well,
it's fantastic to see these guys, but it's better to be here with what we're doing here today, and that's really, really honoring these veterans, honoring our servicemen and women, and making sure our families, the families of these servicemen and women, are remembered and also taken care of. And that's what this money's for, is to help them.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.